streets covered in wreckage, rarely to be seen again. Every 6 months or so, my parents would hit the roof and banish me to my fourth-floor jungle for the weekend, with direct orders not to come out until there was a clear path from the door to my bed. Truth is, I wanted to be organized. I really did, because it was almost as frustrating to me to have my room in such turmoil as it was for them to see it that way. My junkyard of debris was actually a collection of wonderful memories, projects, and ideas. Yet whenever I wanted to take action on any of them, I had no idea where to look. So my Friday nights always started with the best of intentions. But as I surveyed the actual mess, I would freeze in my tracks, paralyzed with confusion as to what action to take. I'd say to myself that success meant eliminating all the visible clutter. So I figured I'd place all the stuff that was strewn all over the room neatly away in my drawers, shelves, and closets. Oops, not possible. Each of my storage units was already packed to the brim. So I'd begin by dumping out all the drawers and emptying all the closets in an effort to decide what junk I could get rid of. In the course of sorting through this stuff, I would rediscover lost treasures I hadn't set eyes on since the last time I'd attempted to get my room in shape. Wow, this reminds me of that trip I took, or, gee, I could really use this someday, became constant refrains, slowing the cleanup process to a crawl, followed by, oh no, I forgot to send this letter, or, oops, I never finished making this scarf, which would bring the process to a grinding halt as I tried to complete each unfinished chore that second. Surrounded by my newly unearthed treasures and unable to part with any of them, I would revise my goal to at least sort everything into categories, creating piles with some kind of logic. But before long, there were piles on top of piles, and I lost track of what I had sorted and what I hadn't and where I was. I was lost at sea again. The clock was ticking. Sunday night was fast approaching. Soon there would be a knock on the door. My parents, ready for the grand unveiling. I would look around my room and realize that it actually looked worse than when I had started. In a panic, I'd quickly gather stuff from every direction and shove it into drawers, closets, and under the bed with no rhyme or reason. The knock arrived, my parents came in, saw the congolium, and applauded me for my efforts. The room was perfect. But I knew better. Sure enough, by the next day, the congolium would start to disappear again as the piles returned. I'd have spent 16 hours of determined activity with no visible payoff for my efforts whatsoever. Another marathon organizing session down the tubes. In 6 months, I would be at it again. There is no doubt that as a teenager, I had the desire, time, and determination to get organized. So what was missing? I had no strategy, that's what. I had no plan, no focus, no idea of how to approach getting organized at all. I was working without a model of success to guide me, and with no sense of direction or timing by which to pace my efforts. As a result, I just dove in blindly, went in circles for hours, and ended up exactly where I started. Sound familiar? Working without a strategy is like trying to drive across the country with no map, no idea of what your destination looks like, and no sense of how long the trip will take. Your chances of getting lost and confused along the way are better than 1,000%. This portion of the audio program will teach you how to navigate the path from chaos to order by showing you exactly where to start, how to map out your journey, and how long it will take you to get there. In order to successfully strategize, I offer you my two secret weapons, techniques you can rely on to quickly map out a plan of action for every organizing job, no matter how large or how small. Julie's secret weapon number one, the kindergarten model of organization. As I've said, organizing is not just about getting rid of clutter and making the space look neat. It goes much deeper than that. Organizing is about designing your space so that it reflects who you are and what's important to you, and arranging things logically and efficiently so that staying organized will be easy for you. The first step in strategizing is to develop a clear picture of where you are headed. This requires visualizing what you want your space to look like when it's finally organized. So how should your space look? From the day I started my business, I have designed every home, every office, and every schedule for every client I've ever worked with on the model of a kindergarten classroom. It's my secret weapon for attacking any space because it is simple and effective, it works every time, and it represents the essence of being organized from the inside out. You walk into any kindergarten classroom in the world, and you will behold the perfect model of organization. Think about what makes it work. First, the room is divided into activity zones: the reading zone, the dress-up zone, the arts and crafts zone, the music zone, and the snack zone. Second, it's easy for the child to focus on one activity at a time. Each zone is well-defined and fully self-contained so that the child can concentrate 100% on a given task. Nothing else competes for his or her attention. Third, everything needed for each activity is right there at the child's fingertips because items are stored at their point of use. For example, if the child is doing arts and crafts, all the paper, crayons, markers, paints, brushes, and smocks needed for a creative session are gathered in one convenient location. You don't have supplies scattered in various closets and shelves around the room. That would make doing arts and crafts much too complicated and intimidating. Fourth, in a kindergarten classroom, it is almost as much fun putting things away as it is playing with them. Every item has a clear, well-labeled home in a container that is the perfect size and shape to hold it. There are sliding trays for the puzzles, wooden blocks with holes in them for scissors. Cubbies and hooks have the child's name on them, maybe even the child's picture. As a result, you seldom see a kindergartner trying to figure out where to return something. Cleanup is fast and easy. The teacher rings the bell, and in a matter of moments, the room is in tip-top shape once again. Fifth, and most importantly, a kindergarten classroom offers a visual menu of everything that is important to the people who inhabit that space. A child can walk into that classroom, look around, and decide what to do and where to do it based on a set of clearly defined cues. The beauty of the kindergarten model is that it can be applied to anything from a whole home or office to just one room or a single drawer. By following this model, you will design your space for easy access and retrieval of any item. The space will be inviting and enjoyable to use and allow you to concentrate on one activity at a time. Your surroundings will give you visual cues as to what there is to do. And when life gets busy and priorities get confused, a glance at your very environment will help keep you focused on who you are and what is important to you. Let's look at how the kindergarten model would work in a kitchen, one of the key rooms in the house, and one which you may have already intuitively set up this way. The typical activity zones of a kitchen are food preparation, cooking, dishwashing and dish storage, food storage, utility, and household paperwork. As you identify each zone, think about what supplies are required to perform that activity and what storage units you might use to house those supplies. The food preparation zone is where you do all the cutting, chopping, mixing, and seasoning of food before it is cooked. Therefore, the best location for this zone is usually on the longest available counter between the sink and the stove or the sink and the refrigerator. Use the cabinets above and below this countertop to store necessary food preparation supplies, such as cutting boards, knives, mixing bowls, measuring cups, spoons, appliances, seasonings, and plastic wraps. Naturally, the cooking zone is best located around the stove and cooktop. It is here where you would store all your pots and pans, pot holders, bakeware, and cooking utensils to make cooking a simple and convenient task. For the dishwashing and dish storage zone, store everyday dishes, glassware, flatware, dish towels, and detergent as close to the sink and dishwasher as possible. This makes it easy to reach up and put away items from the dishwasher or dish drainer without requiring long trips across your kitchen to some remote or inconvenient location. The utility zone, for heavy-duty cleaning and maintenance of the kitchen, can be located under the sink or in a nearby closet to conveniently hold your full supply of sponges, cleaners, mops, brooms, garbage bags, and possibly even pet supplies. In households with small children, be sure to put a safety lock on cabinets containing potentially hazardous materials. The food storage zone is where food is kept, and it is comprised of the refrigerator and, if you are lucky, a separate pantry. In kitchens where there is no formal pantry, consider storing food in the cabinets near the refrigerator to keep all food in one section of the kitchen and make it easy to gather ingredients for a meal. The Household Information Center is that area in your kitchen where the mail is dumped, phone calls are made, coupons are kept, and sometimes even bills are paid. Not everyone keeps this paperwork in the kitchen. Wherever you do choose to keep your household papers, the important thing is to make sure you create a particular zone for it, including adequate storage for files, paperwork, and supplies. So, how do you take your current state of chaos and transform it into my kindergarten model of organization? The answer is as easy as A, B, C. A, define your zones. B, map out the space. C, rearrange furniture. It's best to do this exercise in the space you are going to organize, with paper and pen in hand. A, define your zones. To design the zones you will need, take out a sheet of paper and divide it into three columns. Label the first column Activity and write all the major activities that go on in the space you are organizing. Keep in mind that the average room can accommodate 3 to 5 activities. Label the center column Supplies and list all the supplies needed to perform each activity. Then label the third column Storage Unit and list all the storage units you have or may need to store the supplies in each zone. We already looked at the zones you would find in a kitchen. Let's look at a few other examples. If you were organizing a living room, the activities you list in the first column may be entertaining friends, watching television, listening to music, reading, and playing board games and cards. In an office, your activities may be working on the computer, making phone calls, doing paperwork, and assembling mailings. In the second column, list the supplies you need to perform each activity. In our living room example, for watching TV, the supplies you may need are the TV guide, remote controls, and videotapes. For listening to music, you need compact discs, audio tapes, cleaning cloths, and headphones. For reading, you need books, magazines, newspapers, a dictionary, and perhaps your reading glasses and a pen. In the third column, look at all the storage units you have in your space and assign which units might make sense for each activity zone. Inventory every drawer, closet, cabinet, and shelf available to you in the space. For example, in the living room, you may have a couple of bookshelves, an entertainment unit, and 2 end tables with drawers. In your office, list each of the filing cabinets, desk drawers, bookcases, and supply closets that you have. If you are zoning the dining room, include each of your china cabinets, hutches, sideboards, and linen cabinets. As you fill out this column, you may feel that you have no appropriate storage units or not a sufficient number of them for some of the items that must be stored. Even if that's the case, don't go on a shopping spree yet. You will probably just waste money. Make a note of your anticipated needs by zone, but don't worry about the solution until the attack stage, where you may find that you already have what you need after all. Keep in mind, you can get creative by using storage units in untraditional ways. For example, if you do your paperwork in the dining room, consider storing papers in portable file boxes in a sideboard rather than in a traditional filing cabinet. B. Map out the space. Now that you have figured out what zones you need, it's time to determine where in the room each zone should be located. On a second piece of paper, draw a map of the space and sketch out some ideas for rearranging the room to create each activity zone. Be sure to include what storage units will go in each zone. Your drawing doesn't have to be precisely to scale, but you may want to use a ruler to help draw straight lines. A tape measure will also be helpful in determining whether something will fit in a particular zone. As you plan the space, don't feel constrained by the location of outlets and phone jacks. This is what extension cords are for. Later, if necessary, you can always have an electrician or telephone specialist come in to install new outlets and jacks. Your comfort, convenience, and logic are your prime considerations in locating zones. Let the wiring accommodate you. In determining where each zone should be located, there are several points to consider. First, try to build them around your natural habits and preferences. Take a look at where the piles of clutter seem to accumulate. This will give you a clue as to where certain zones should be. For example, if books and magazines are piled on the floor next to the sofa, obviously that's where you like to read. Make it easy to grab and return reading materials with minimum effort by moving a bookcase and magazine basket next to the sofa. Voila! You've got an instant reading zone that you will find easy and natural to maintain. Second, think about the relationship of one activity to another in determining where your zone should be. For example, in a living room, you may want to locate the TV zone at one end of the room and the reading zone at the opposite end so that different members of the family can enjoy the space simultaneously. On the other hand, you may wish certain zones to be located near each other because they are naturally related. For example, in an office, it is convenient to locate the computer zone near your main paperwork zone because the materials from one are often used in conjunction with the other. The architectural configurations and restrictions of the room are the third element to consider, as sometimes they provide a starting point for designing the space. For example, in zoning a bedroom, you would do well to create a compact dressing zone by moving all bureaus and chests of drawers nearer to the closet. This arrangement will make it easy to get dressed in the morning without having to run back and forth across the room. Built-in cabinets and wall units can also influence where to set up zones. But if you discover that you're consistently performing an activity far away from the built-in unit where your supplies for this activity are stored, it may be time to seriously consider finding a new and different use for that built-in. The key to success in organizing from the inside out is to work with, not against, your habits. And finally, C, rearranging furniture. If the clutter is too voluminous, rearranging furniture may not be feasible until after you've done some sorting and purging. But if you can, start moving furniture and storage units around now to make your zones come alive. It will offer some wonderful benefits. First, you'll actually see what will fit where and how you like it there, so you can make any necessary adjustments to your design choices. Second, and most important, it will give you a rewarding feeling of having plunged into the organizing process head-on and seen a dramatic, visible change in your environment right away. This instant transformation is very motivating and will boost your enthusiasm for following the project through to the end. To make it easier to move things around, you might need to temporarily box up some of the piles of stuff cluttering the floors and surfaces. This is sometimes a bonus because once things are in boxes, it is often less intimidating to sort through them. The room seems instantly cleaner and more spacious, and you can tackle one box at a time until the job is done. If your space is too filled with clutter to move furniture at this point, don't panic. Just hold off until later in the attack stage, by which time you'll have much more freedom of movement. Julie's secret weapon number 2. Estimate the time. One of the biggest mistakes people make when it comes to getting organized is not being realistic about how long the job will take. Most people either dramatically overestimate or drastically underestimate the time required. If you overestimate how long a project will take, you're likely to procrastinate forever and never get started. Let's say it's actually a 3-day project, but you've estimated 3 months. The job will seem hopelessly monumental to you, and you'll say, "Forget it, it's not even worth starting, I'll never get through it all." On the other hand, saying, "I'll tackle this Saturday morning before I go to the beach," absurdly underestimates the amount of time almost any organizing project will take. You'll put in the time, but then, seeing little or no result for all your effort, you'll walk away well short of the finish line grumbling, "Organizing isn't worthwhile, it just can't be done." The truth is, most rooms in the home take an average of 1 to 1.5 days to complete. The average one-person office takes 2 to 3 days. Some spaces like bathrooms and small closets may take only a few hours, while others, such as extremely packed garages or offices, may take an extra day or two, but every organizing project is manageable. The key is, once you know how long the job will actually take, you can establish a realistic work schedule to ensure that you get the whole job done. Establishing a work schedule means deciding when you will work and literally blocking out that time on your calendar. In determining your work schedule, take into account your available time, your sense of urgency, and how quickly you want to see changes. Based on your analysis of what's holding you back, you may decide you need time to adapt to the transformation of your space, and so you will choose to work slowly, a few hours a week over a month or two. On the other hand, you may want to see results instantaneously and decide to dive in and finish the job in a matter of days. The biggest mistake many people make is to skip establishing a schedule at all. "I'll just fit it into my spare time," they say. This approach practically guarantees failure because there is no such thing as spare time. Even if you were able to find some, would organizing really be your automatic first choice of how to spend it? I don't think so. Show your commitment to getting organized by scheduling appointments with yourself to do the job and write them on your calendar in indelible ink. Then honor that commitment. You have so much to gain. Congratulations! You've analyzed and strategized, and now you're ready to put on some comfortable clothes, roll up your sleeves, and begin the third and final stage of our 3-step process of organizing from the inside out. Attack! Getting the job done. Of course, even this stage requires a methodical approach. To remember the order of the attack phase, think of the word space as an acronym: S, sort; P, purge; A, assign a home; C, containerize; and E, equalize. Space. The key to succeeding with the space formula is to do every one of the steps, and most importantly, do them in order. Many of the actions may be familiar to you, but my guess is in the past you only did some of them, and you may have done them out of sequence. For example, when you felt ready to get organized in the past, you probably started either by purging, "I'm going to get rid of as much of this junk as I can," or containerizing, "I'm going shopping for containers and bins to get myself organized." Done out of sequence, these actions are highly ineffective, because you do not yet have enough information gathered to make the right decisions. Now, let's look at each of the 5 critical steps and how they work. Number 1, sort. The goal of the sort step is to group similar items and see what you have. If your space is disorganized, you undoubtedly have many related items scattered in diverse locations. Not only does this make it hard to find things, it makes it almost impossible to quantify what you really have. So here is where you go through each possession and create a sense of order. It is crucial that you handle every item. Pick up each piece of clothing, paper, and collectible and evaluate it individually, asking yourself these questions. Do I use this? Do I love this? What category does this belong in? Don't put off or ignore miscellaneous piles of stuff scattered in corners that seem too intimidating. Skipping or postponing anything to some other time will prevent you from seeing the big picture before you set up your system. The result is an incomplete design, which will inevitably unravel in time. As you sort, focus on the following. Identify what is important to you. Focus on those items you currently use and love, and/or that make you money, not those that used to be important to you or might be important to you someday. This task will be much easier as a result of the questions you answered in the analyze phase, such as what is essential to you and why do you want to get organized? Group similar items. As you identify the important items you want to keep, place them on the floor or another surface in related categories that reflect your associations, not someone else's. They only have to make sense to you. This is one of the keys of organizing from the inside out, to design a system that is intuitive and natural to you, so that you can find things and put them away again without too much thought. Just keep categories as broad as possible so they'll be easy to remember and you'll have the least number of places to look when you start assigning items a home. Julie's Law of Visible Dramatic Results. Here are three sorting secrets to make sure you see visible dramatic results each time you work. The visual display of your progress will keep you inspired and driven, determined to make it to the finish line. Attack what's visible first. Remember those marathon weekends I spent as a teenager? A classic mistake I'd made was deciding to attack the invisible clutter, the stuff inside drawers, cabinets, and closets, before tackling the stuff I could see. The invisible clutter is usually old, things you haven't looked at in years, while the stuff on the surface is current. Use your initial burst of enthusiasm and energy to organize the visible clutter first, because that is the stuff that has the most immediate relevance and impact on your life. Leave the invisible clutter till later. Quick sort for quick results. Quick sort is a tactic designed to keep you moving swiftly through your stuff. During sort, don't belabor any decisions about what to keep and what to toss, which just slows the process down and makes it grueling. Your focus should be on identifying items and categorizing them, not on what to get rid of. If a decision to toss something comes to you easily, and many will, great. But if not, give it a category and move on. As for those incomplete projects, unanswered phone messages, and unread articles you discover, now is not the time to do them. Keep a running list of all unfinished to-dos you discover along the way, and schedule a separate appointment with yourself to deal with them. Remember, this is a sorting session, not a catch-up session. If you stay focused on your sorting task, you will see results before you know it. Lastly, avoid zigzag organizing. Most people make the mistake of scattering their organizing efforts, working back and forth between several rooms at once. This is what I call zigzag organizing, a method that is guaranteed to provide the minimum results in the maximum time. The opposite of zigzag organizing is to work one section at a time. That means completing one room before moving on to the next, and within each room, tackling the space one section at a time. Decide up front which corner of the room you want to serve as the launch pad for your organizing efforts, and complete that section before moving on to the next. If you find something that belongs elsewhere, create a belongs elsewhere box and keep it in the doorway for now. At the end of your organizing session, you can distribute the items to their proper home. Working one section at a time allows you to see progress. It also gives you logical places to take breaks to recoup your energy and determination. If you need a rest, you can say, "Okay, I'll finish this corner and then go get a cup of coffee." When you come back to the room, the first thing you'll see is that beautifully organized section, which will encourage you to move on to the next section. and the next. Step two of the attack phase, purge. Here is where you decide what stuff to get rid of and how. You will always have several choices. Toss, give away, sell, put elsewhere, store. Have appropriately labeled boxes on hand throughout the attack process to sort your discards into. If you're the type of person who is traumatized or threatened by the thought of having to get rid of anything, remember that you don't have to purge anything right now. Just organize everything you've got so that it's finally accessible. Once you've lived with that satisfying experience for a while, you can decide later on if you want to lighten the load. Even those of you who are ready to start getting rid of stuff may find it a difficult process. Here are some tips to make it easier. Some items to toss, those I call no-brainers, will be obvious. These are items that are in such bad shape and so irrelevant to your life right now that you couldn't or wouldn't use them if you wanted to. For example, rusty nails, dried-up nail polish, 6-month-old newspapers. Other items may pose tougher choices. For example, once you've consolidated them in the sorting process, you may find you have too much stuff in a single category. Maybe you have 16 pairs of running shoes, even though you only use 3. In the interest of saving storage space and simplifying the retrieval process, pick only your favorites and give the rest the boot. You may also discover it difficult to part with certain items because you or someone spent good money on them, even though they're never used. It could be an impulsively purchased piece of clothing, or a gift someone gave you that you already have or just don't want. How do you motivate yourself to part with these things? Think about what you'll gain in return. Space for the things you really use and love. Time saved searching through all the unused clutter to get at what's really important to you. Money it's costing you to house and maintain these items. Giving them away or selling them could yield a tax deduction or put some extra dollars in your pocket. Satisfaction. Share the items you no longer use. Surely there are people in the world who could use them. To decide what to do with those discards not consigned to the trash, consider the following options. Adopt a charity. Pick an organization that is meaningful to you and will pick up the stuff if you don't have the time or transportation to get it there yourself. Adopt a friend. You may feel better knowing your cast-offs will be going to someone familiar, a close pal, acquaintance, neighbor, housekeeper, who would love to have them. Have a tag sale or sell through a consignment shop. And lastly, consider off-site storage. Getting unused things out of your home or office into off-site storage will allow you to experience clutter-free living without the trauma of parting with them permanently. Rates are not high, and some companies offer pickup and delivery service. They bring a container to your door, you fill it, and they whisk it away. Couldn't be more convenient. Once it is off-site, you may even find it easier to decide what to keep long-term. Step three of the attack phase, assign a home. Now it's time to take all the items you're keeping and decide precisely where within each zone you're going to store them. Which shelf, which drawer, which side of the bed. If you weren't able to do so before, now is the time to move the furniture around to see how your zone design looks and if your available storage units will accommodate everything you want to put in them. Avoid being vague and indecisive about where to put items by applying the Select One rule of giving each item a single, consistent home. This is key to trusting your system. Use the following guidelines in assigning homes. Appropriate sizing. Match the size and number of the items to the size of the storage unit to avoid wasting or taking up too much space. For example, use a shallow drawer for belts, a deep one for sweaters. Single function storage. Don't mix categories within a storage unit. It makes retrieval too complicated. For example, when possible, put t-shirts in one drawer and jeans in another, rather than putting both in the same drawer. Logical sequencing. Position similar groups of items near each other. Again, follow your own associations. In your dresser, for example, you might place workout clothes and swimsuits in drawers next to each other because they are both related to fitness. Accessibility. Make it easy to retrieve and put back frequently used items by not jamming too many things in drawers or stacking them on shelves too high to reach. And finally, safety. Don't store anything that is heavy or fragile too high on a storage unit. Injury or breakage could occur as you attempt to retrieve or put it back. For the same reason, don't jam fragile items too close to each other on a shelf or in a drawer. If you have children in the house, be sure to place items that could harm them out of reach or behind locked doors. As you put items away in their assigned homes, you may discover that you don't have enough storage space for everything. Your options are either to reevaluate and purge some more, or increase storage room. There are often hidden pockets of storage space that can be found, and ways to make the most of every square inch inside those closets and cabinets, which leads us to step 4 of the attack phase, containerize. Containers make it easy to keep your categories of items grouped and separated within their assigned homes so that retrieval, cleanup, and maintenance are a breeze. Imagine a linen closet, for example. You've spent hours sorting and purging the contents and now have piles of items grouped by category. Dental stuff, soaps, hair care, first aid, extra paper goods. If you loosely place these groups of items on your shelves, it will be hard to tell where one category leaves off and the next begins. But if you put each group into a plastic basket and label your baskets on the shelves, retrieval and return will be a snap. Cleaning the shelves will be much easier too. Just remove the baskets, wipe the shelves off, then return the baskets. Try doing that as easily with 80 loose bottles, jars, and boxes. Another big benefit of containerizing is that it helps limit how much you accumulate in any given category. You can only save as much as the container will hold. Finally, and most important, containerizing is where you can really get creative and have fun infusing your system with your personal style. Here are 4 things to look for when selecting containers. Aesthetics. Choose containers that you love. They should be delightful to use and blend attractively with the decor you've chosen for your space, whether it's shabby chic, country cozy, or high-tech steel. Sturdiness. Don't be tempted to economize. Your containers must be tough enough to withstand repeated use. If they fall apart, break, or feel flimsy, you'll stop using them. Manageability. Containers should be easy to handle. If you'll be storing a lot of items in them, consider their weight when full. And lastly, size. Make sure they are a proper fit for the number of items you will be storing without overcrowding. Consider leaving a little room for growth, but not much. Prepare your shopping list. To avoid having to make 50 trips to the store, be sure to plan ahead. Start by making a complete shopping list of all the containers you'll need. I like to organize my shopping list by zone right onto my original zone planning sheet so that when I'm at the store, I can see exactly how I plan to use each container in case I need to find a substitute. To ensure you buy the right containers, measure before you go shopping. There is nothing more aggravating, not to mention costly and time-consuming, than discovering the drawer dividers you bought are a quarter of an inch taller than the drawers they're supposed to go in. Measure the height, width, and depth, and count the quantity of items to be stored to know what size container you'll need. For example, count the number of shoes you need your shoe rack to accommodate, and measure at least one pair to make sure you buy the right length shoe rack. Measure the height, width, and depth of each space a container will go into to know what will fit. For example, measure the shelf or drawer your basket must fit into. And And measure the actual containers in the store itself to be sure they'll fit by taking along a tape measure for added insurance. Labeling. Once you've got all your containers installed, it's time to label them. Labeling is not just for kids. It ensures that things get put back where they belong, making cleanup a quick, painless, and mindless activity. Labeling is especially important if others will be sharing your space to make sure things are consistently put back where they belong. It is critical that your labels are legible, neat, and attractive, and that they adhere. No one, not even you, will respect your labels if they look like chicken scratch or if they fall off. White labels with bold black lettering work best. You can write them by hand, but for best easy-to-read results, use a label maker or a word processor. Voila! You're done! You're organized! Well, almost. Now let's look at the final step of the attack phase. Equalize. Equalizing is how you maintain your system, and it's a critical step of the organizing process. About 2 weeks after you've finished, make an appointment with yourself to evaluate how well your system has been working. Is everything as easy as you'd like it to be? Are you following your system? Do the zones and categories you set up work well for you? Are there any rough spots that a quick review of your needs assessment might help to iron out? Reevaluate again every couple of weeks thereafter until you're completely happy with your system. Once you've got a system that works well for you, you need to integrate a maintenance program into your lifestyle so that it becomes a matter of routine. Keep it simple. If your maintenance program is too time-consuming and complex, you won't follow it. There are two aspects of equalizing your system: daily cleanup and periodic tune-ups. Daily cleanup. It's important to create a set time to clean up and put things back at the end of each day. Regardless of how messy your space gets in the course of the day, no room should ever take more than 3 to 5 minutes because everything now has a logical, accessible, and identifiable home. Periodic tune-ups. In addition to daily cleanup, periodic tune-ups are essential so your system will always keep current with any changes in your needs, goals, possessions, and priorities. Schedule appointments with yourself once or twice a year to evaluate how your system is working. Make adjustments for any new items you've acquired, purge old stuff that's no longer relevant, and even buy yourself a spiffy new organizing gizmo from time to time to keep your system fun and engaging. These occasional facelifts will prevent you from getting tired of your system and abandoning it out of boredom. Skills for a lifetime. Like anything else worth doing, organizing takes time to master. You're bound to make mistakes and stumble along the way. Try not to panic or get angry with yourself. Just relax, work out the bugs, and simply get yourself back on track. Once you've mastered these skills, they'll last you forever because they're skills for life. That's their greatest value. You can apply them over and over again to almost any task. The skills learned in organizing from the inside out will give you a lasting sense of security, personal identity, pride, and peace, a necessity in the increasingly complex and rapidly changing world of today. So go on, get organized. I know you can do it.
Organizing from the inside out. The foolproof system for organizing your home, your office, and your life was written and read by Julie Morgenstern. It was abridged for audio by Harold Schmidt. The recording engineer was Leszek Wojcik, with editing and post-production by Common Mode. Paul Fowley, technical director. The associate producer was Sally Hurst. Organizing from the inside out, the foolproof system for organizing your home, your office, and your life, was produced and directed by Florence Barreau Adams. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.